This is Paul Zacco. I own Zacco's Home Brewing in Willimantic, Connecticut, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 6. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. This is Rhea Windcaller, your Cider MC, and I think you could hear that little bit of background music. Yep. We are chilling out because it is Thanksgiving week here in the U.S., and it is a time to just enjoy the company of friends and family, and to enjoy a bit of cider. You could hear I kind of moved a little bit of the bubbling in the background, a little bit of jazzy music just for you. And that is what this show is all about, making it just for you and for all of us to connect with cider makers and cider enthusiasts from around the globe. And this week, we're speaking to a very special guest, a friend of mine. His name is Paul Zacco, and he owns a homebrew shop, and he's been doing this for a long time, and it's a really great episode that has lots of information. He's going to be telling you a lot of amazing tips for making cider, and this guy knows how to do it because he was Mr. Cider Maker of the Year. I guess it was New England Cider Maker. He got both New England Cider Maker, Mead Maker, and Homebrewer of the Year. And for cider, he was the winner for 12 years in a row. Super excited. He's a friend of mine. He's a fellow writer, a beer writer. He and I both write about cider for Yankee Brew News, which is a beeriodical. Now it's becoming a cideroticle. I can't even say that. That's a mouthful. Anyways, we're writing a lot more about cider these days, of course. And there's going to be quite a bit of info there, but no worries, because I will have all the things he's talking about, the little tips. I'll have links to some of those tips on the show notes. And the show notes can be found at the website, ciderchat.com. And there you'll find all previous podcast episodes, such as last week's was Nick Gunn and Dave White, two Northwest cider makers, one from Wandering Angus and Anthem Cider, that's Nick, and then Dave White from Whitewood Cider. They were kind enough to chat with me and let us know what's going on between like the West Coast and the East Coast, and some really cool stuff like mobile juicing and cider bars in their area. That was a great episode, as all the previous ones were. And I also did an additional mini spoof episode. That's episode 5, which is called Thanks Podcasting, and that's where I somehow was able to channel with President John Adams. I mean, can you believe it? I didn't know I could channel people, but somehow I was able to do that. I had too much fun. So if you are, you know, I don't know if you're on your way to your family right now, maybe it's months from Thanksgiving that you're listening to this, or maybe you are taking a break from Thanksgiving dinner and just finally able to catch up on your cider podcasts. If you need a laugh, I recommend listening to that episode. It's only about 4 minutes long, and certainly I laughed my ass off, so maybe you will too. Because, you know, that's what life is about, and that's what cider brings us, a whole bunch of glee. All right, we're going to get this chat started right now. Again, it's going to be with Paul Zacco. We're judging cider, actually. And before the judging happened, he kind of squirreled away with me, and I got to chat with him. He's a good friend of mine. And I think it's time for all of us to grab a glass and join this chat.
Paul Zacco. I have a homebrew shop called Zacco's in Willimantic, Connecticut. Been there for 16 years, believe it or not. And I started out selling beer and wine products. Fine. And I started doing cider myself, cider yeast. Tried different cider batches and learned a lot, made a lot of mistakes. I learn more from my customers who make mistakes or make good ones. That's why my cider is good, because they made the mistake that I don't do. Common. It's good for a guy like me.
Yeah.
Learned about yeast. Cider wasn't hot in 2000. Now it's 50% of my yeast requests are cider yeast for 1 month or 1.5 months. Actually, cider is still available in March and April of the following year. A lot of farmers put their cider or apples in nitrogen fixed rooms, set rooms, and squeeze it at will. Mm-hmm. So I can get fresh cider in March. So I get the yeast. After March, I stop doing the cider thing. But I've got Right now, 50% of my people are doing cider. It's amazing.
Wow.
It's amazing. Of course, we had a good crop, you know.
Yeah, right. It's a great year.
I think it's 15. The best year.
Yeah.
I'm not really... I make more beer and wine than cider, but I make maybe 2 batches of cider a year. But just looking as I drive to work, I didn't know there were apple trees in places that were, I thought were woods. Now there's apples. And things. All the berries are going crazy. Pears, I think, are done the same. I know that peaches did and all the other berries. And the ciders are coming out better and better every year. People, trust me, use the yeast. I recommend, which is why yeast. We can't really say that.
No, that's okay. That's great to talk about why yeast. Yeah. Of course.
Right. So that's a
yeast manufacturer.
Yeah, it's a manufacturer out in West Coast. And White Labs is the other one. They make good yeast. I just tend to use why yeast.
Mm-hmm.
It leaves the flavors I like. We can talk about that after if you want. But I have customers who make unbelievable cider from just different blends of apples. But they don't do now. More so. My cider has got 30 different apples in it. I get it up near Mass. I get it up in northern Connecticut. I want a bunch with it. He does tart and sharp and sweet and you name it. He puts it in there. The marriage is perfect.
Nice. Can I back you up just a little bit here?
Sure.
So you have this homebrew supply shop and you're getting all these cider makers in. Mm. How do you define cider to like the person who walks in the store? They've tasted it, they're not sure because, you know, is it sweet cider? Do you call it hard cider? How do you define cider?
Well, people normally don't ask me about that. They usually tell me what they want to make.
Okay.
And they say nobody ever asked that about the different kinds of cider. I describe cider as fermented apple juice. Fresh.
Mm-hmm.
I like pasteurized. Adding things to it to make it different. I had a guy yesterday who's doing 5 ciders, gallon jugs. He's a new cider maker, 5 ciders. He trusted me to pick Y yeast to make his first batch, which came out just right. Perfect. Mm-hmm. I had residual sugar, a touch, residual apple flavor, residual body, opposed to a wine yeast like champagne. Most common,
right?
Which kills most everything. It just leaves a dry white cider. If you like that sort of thing, dry white wines, you'd like it, but the body is gone. So he's making 5 ciders. This is typical of all my customers.
Making 5 different...
the guys want to make special. They want to advance quickly. They make a cider, what can I do next? What can I do? Because after you put your little... the recipe together and it's pitched and you've got a month or two for it to ferment, you get anxious. You want to do a second one.
Right.
It's like you can't have one piece of cheesecake. You got to have that second one.
Love it.
And it's typical. Yeah. So I say, well, you made a common cider, which is not really the most common anymore. Common cider is apple juice or pear juice for Perry. Fermented out, no sugar added, all that stuff. Common.
Right.
So you depend on the apples and the blend. So if you're smart, you keep notes. I'm Italian, I talk with my hands.
Paul was just kind of tapping the table.
Oh, yeah.
It's just going to stop.
The people who make the cider try different cider mills, and that's the beauty of it. We're at a beer fest today, and we're going to have 650 beers. Everyone's different. I just was in Denver, and I judged 8,300. They're all different. Every cider we get now is different. This guy's got just max growing. He's going to squash his apples and make just max. And the other guy, the smarter one, has a little bit of bitter stuff over there, and he blends it. So every cider maker makes something different. That's why it's crazy right now.
That's the beauty of it, yeah.
Well, one beauty of it, it's gluten-free,
right?
Whatever that means.
Right.
Because I didn't know anything about gluten problems when I was a kid, but now everybody got a gluten problem.
Well, you do know what it means now, right?
Oh, I know what it means. I sell gluten, some gluten-free products and extracts for beer. People like the fact that it's gluten-free. The market here has gone up, I think the number is 74%, I think, market growth in a one-year time. I think it was something like 77%.
I heard 60, 70. I mean, it's
Sweden. A lot.
It's high.
Like,
that's
huge. If it was 6%, it's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Europe, I mean, over Europe, once, twice a year, it's crazy. You should see this. You were just there.
Yes, I was. Yeah.
I wasn't even in cider places. I was in Italy.
Yeah.
And there's ciders everywhere. Yeah. Ireland.
Yeah.
Every bar has a tap of Perry.
Sure.
And it's good.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
so, exactly. So as far as making good cider, just get a good blender or learn how to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Use the right yeast.
Can I talk to you about, you said you prefer pasteurized, and Cider Days, which happens in Franklin County every year, the Pine Hill Orchard there has three different blends, and it's all unpasteurized. And really that weekend, it's all about if you could get unpasteurized. And pasteurized could be through heating it, or also ultraviolet
or chemical. But,
or chemical.
But,
so why do you prefer pasteurized?
Well, it doesn't have to be pasteurized. The way things are now, for years you couldn't get cider from a mill that wasn't pasteurized because of that E. coli problem years ago, if you remember that.
Well, if you're going to drink it as sweet cider, it's a problem.
Sweet cider, right.
Sure, big problem.
But still, you don't want any bacteria in there. It'll mess up your fermentation. You may have these bitter, sour, acetal, whatever things.
And if I could just say, so just any listener who says, E. coli, what are you talking about? We're talking about the apples that are picked up from the ground, the drops, and they're not really fully washed. And there's animals going through. So
that's E. coli is a fecal bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you don't, if you have washed apples, still the equipment and things have bacteria on them.
Right.
But I talked to a cider maker, a cider owner, a mill owner, last fall, and she said, well, we have unpasteurized. And I said, I thought you had to have it by Connecticut state law. I live in Connecticut.
Yeah.
She said, no, the laws have changed. You no longer see a little cider mill, but little wood, quaint, all that stuff. You go on Sunday and it's not like now, it's kind of a closed room.
Right.
It's stainless steel, plastic.
Or plastic,
and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And you don't have absorbent materials that suck up that bacteria and keep it alive.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's different.
They wash it all down and everything. It's very
So now hygienic. It's totally different.
Yeah.
So,
kind of sad a little bit to lose that piece. I mean, you know, we go to these extremes. And I personally really like the vitality of a non-pasteurized cider.
I do,
sweet
too.
Cider. I really enjoy it. And I also like cider making with that type of...
I like to see a cider mill that's got wooden, handcrafted things. And
it's a thing.
I have one. I have a cider press that's wood and a wine press. And you don't see these anymore. That's a test of the times. The bacterial things happen and people get sick.
Yeah.
Or the cider gets funky, it ferments the wrong way.
Right.
So, either way... I do not pasteurize sometime.
Mm-hmm.
I pasteurize myself. I simply just heat the cider up.
Okay.
Well, what I do is this. If I want to make a good cider, and any cider maker would know this after his first or second time, is go to your cider mill and buy your little pint, drink it out in the parking lot. If it's good, you go back in, you make a deal to buy 5 gallons. Simple as that.
Good advice, yes.
Great. It works every time.
Great advice, yeah.
Right. But if you buy it in September, you get type A cider. You buy it in late September or October, you get type B, the Granny Smiths come out, all these other, I don't even know the apples. I know that I recently did a story about cider, and I talked to a cider maker in Maine or Vermont. She's had 130 different cultivars, types of apples, on her property in the last 20 or 25 years. Some cider apples, especially in Europe, as you know, you were there, are grown for cider only. You can't eat them. They don't taste good.
Right. Very high tannins.
So we don't have that here. We don't have, but it's getting there. Cider right now,
maybe
it's happening.
Maybe not in Connecticut. Not in Connecticut, but certainly in different cider places.
Well, things have changed now.
Absolutely.
A lot of these, the cider's gone crazy.
Yeah.
But it's education. You know, you got a guy like yourself. You make cider.
Absolutely.
If you want a little bit of tart, a little tannic,
just
get that apple or put tannic, grape tannins in it. If you want the tannic. I've made... Granny Smith, 100%. I got Granny Smith apples. I chopped them up with a machete. I squash them, put them in my blender.
I'd like to get a photo of that, chopping it up with a machete.
That's the easiest way, seriously, because the problem with making cider now is you need a crusher and you need a press.
Yes.
Crushers cost too much. Presses, you see those around.
Yeah.
But I made 100% Granny Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And it won me so much because it was so different. Nobody did that.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wanted sweet cider.
Right.
That had a different flavor,
mm-hmm.
but the Granny Smith had a. Of course, I like lambics and Flemish beers also.
Sure.
It's my favorite. So, but you know,
so it might be hard for you to get something like a Kingston Black that has some of those high tannins. So you're actually adding something into the cider to give those because you're not getting the apples. Is that what I'm getting correctly?
I don't get the apples. I buy my cider already pressed.
Right.
I don't press anymore. I did the Granny Smith just for fun.
Right.
I did another one. I did a mix of what were they? Ida Reds or McCowans. I forgot what they were, but I got a whole bunch of bushels of them like the farmer gave me.
Mm-hmm.
And I chopped them and pressed them and made nice cider. But when these guys mix them, they know. And that's the trick.
Sure.
Some of the ciders you get these days, though they're good, they're not typical in style, you know, like the Sam Adams, the Angry Orchard. Delicious. Sweet. If you want a sweet apple flavor. And the other ones, there's a lot of them, one up in Woodchuck.
Yeah.
They're really not typical styles, but they're tasty. They've gotten people drinking cider.
Right.
And Americans have a sweet tooth.
It's a good beginning for any, like, a beer drinker, too.
Right.
You know, any kind of libation, you have to get the drinkers in there.
I don't think it's a beginning. Because when I go to Germany, and I've been to Germany a bunch of times, and I go into wine country, I drink Liebfraumelches, Rieslings, those type of wines, their residual sweetness is high.
It's high, but I find the balance is different.
The balance is different, but it's not dry white.
Right,
it's off dry or semi-sweet. The Germans like sweet, and their beers are sweet also, some of their beers.
Sure,
well, the Fest and the Viennas and those type of beers.
Yeah.
So I think the sweet tooth is, the sweet thing is a good thing.
I think all the ranges are great. Like in the UK, you have sweet, medium, and dry, right? And that's their kind of styles that they're doing. But for me, when I get, you know, and not that I'm concerned, I really appreciate the large producers of cider, is that it could also be on the edge of wine coolerness with some of the cider. And so just concerns me.
Well, Alco
Pops. You
get
the wrong, you know, idea of what it is.
Yeah, so Alco Pops. I can't say a bad thing about any of that whatsoever.
Yeah. No, we're good.
Whatsoever. Because I'm a brewer. I'm a winemaker. I'm learning to make sake. I do all that stuff, mead. And when I'm at the beach, if I go to a beach bar and I have food, I'll get a lemon wine cooler because I love the refreshing sour and I like the sweet of it.
Yeah, good point, Paul.
And the Alco Pop market, Alco Pops, if you want to describe it, they're just... They're malt-based, they're sweet. I know that a few years ago, they were more than 50% of the summer market. Ciders are sweet, as a rule.
Mm-hmm.
There's not very many dry ciders, as there are dry meats. Mm-hmm. People like sweet.
And also people who are getting into cider, they expect it to taste sweet because they've always drank sweet cider. So I always notice the first sip that nobody's ever tried it before, if it's dry, they're like, what? What is this? But if you have that sweet initial, that's why I'm going back to the introductory.
Yeah.
And then you could get more into the farm styles, which I'd like to talk about, that classic quintessential New England
farmhouse.
Cider.
Well, that's different. Farmhouse, I call them spontaneous fermented, wild.
Wild yeast.
Like the pilgrims did, like the world did before they figured out there was yeast. Mm-hmm. You have to like dryness. Because if you do a wild one, do you want to describe the wild one?
Please do.
The wild is just a spontaneous fermentation. You're getting your sugar, you're squeezing your apples, adding whatever you want to it, sugars, or just squeezing your apple juice or pear juice, and letting it ferment from the skins, the yeast and the bacteria that's on the skin.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the old style winemaking, Italy, Greece, and France, all that. It's not predictable. If you have bacteria, you could have a funny fermentation. But bacteria like lactobacillus or fungus is like Brettanomyces will give a character. There's nothing better than a good apple cider, a good blend with 100% Brettanomyces. You have a dryness, you have this unusual aroma. It's complex. It's not just taste.
Right, so
it's a totally different animal.
Good funk, I guess, is the way to call
it's good
it.
Funk.
Yeah, good funk. Yeah.
I'm not sure if your listeners. Well, I'm sure the listeners will have had some wild ciders. I've had some wild ciders that they're unbelievable. I made a Brettanomyces cider, just Brettanomyces.
Yeah.
And it married the flavors unbelievably, but it changed.
Well, how do you work with it? Because a lot of the European ciders are spontaneous.
Yeah.
The balance is so exquisite, and we're seeing that more and more in the U.S. When you're making it yourself for somebody who's going to go out and, well, we could do that in our refrigerator, just let it spontaneously ferment. But to get that nice balance, how are you nurturing that cider?
Well, one thing is practice.
True that.
It's practice. Because...
temperature?
Well, it's temperature. You can't do it in the refrigerator. You need, you know, 60, probably 60 to 70, and maybe more. Mm-hmm. Some of my wild beers, I ferment at 100, 95 or 100.
Are you talking about initial primary?
The whole thing.
The whole thing, the whole time.
Now, everything is different. If you ferment, I'm not as knowledgeable on cider characteristics, yeast characteristics as I am with beer, but it's probably the same. Esters are produced. Esters, the honey, fruity, honey, peach, all that, apricot. Mm-hmm. That happens sometime with a higher temperature, higher ferment temp. Sometime with stressed out yeast, you may get some butterscotchy. I'm not sure if it happens in cider. It happens in beer. But all these flavors make an individual cider. Mm-hmm. So when you get these guys like, and I haven't had it yet, you know these guys, Urban Fermentory.
Right.
They're up north somewhere, Vermont or Maine.
Yeah.
Which
yes.
is where the people do things like that. You know, they do things. It's different there.
Sure.
Oh, I mean, it's amazing.
All these guys map, yeah.
So I talked to the owner. Yeah. He said, I do everything spontaneous. So today, well, of course, the Brett's going to be in the air. And his barrels have Brett and the bacteria that's fermenting impregnated in the wood. So you have basically a mother culture going all the time. So he's not adding anything to it, but he's got this mother culture.
Mm.
After the ferment happens, you get a lot of sludge, a lot of yeast drop out.
Definitely.
You could save that and you could pitch it in your next batch. But these barrels have been inoculated. Infected is the other word. Mm-hmm. Inoculated is the better word.
Right.
But they're inoculated. So wildness, I just had a wild sake last week in New York. Namasake. Wild fermented.
Right.
Well, it's kind of wild. They only pasteurize it once, but the wildness happens. It's got to be kept cold or it funks out major, and it's not cheap. And it's wonderful. It's like drinking...
So that go ahead, finish that thought.
Yeah.
It's like drinking...
Well, it's like drinking a lambic.
Right.
You know, it's got the tang in it sometimes, and they're all different.
Right.
You want to show your individuality.
Mm-hmm.
And I have customers. I have hundreds, maybe thousands over the years that homebrew, make wine, and do that type of stuff, and make cider. Nobody's doing it to save a nickel. They're all doing it to express themselves as a craft. This is a craft.
Yes.
Everyone. If I get one out of 1,000 that says, well, how much will it cost me to make a batch? And I say, well, it's going to cost you $30 or $40 to make a batch of beer, you know, two cases of, and that's rare. He's not doing this to save money, but 99.9% of guys are doing it to show craft.
Mm-hmm.
So you got guys this year who are making apple and pear cider because the apples are grown in the backyard. They're apple trees. And the wild stuff, they drive by every day on the way to work. They see thousands of apples on the ground. This has been an unbelievable year.
Yes.
Huge. Last week, I got wild chestnuts, which I haven't seen ever in one area.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to tell anybody where I got them.
It's like mushroom hunting.
It's like mushroom hunting, which I do too.
Yeah.
And my mushroom sites, they're private. My asparagus, wild asparagus.
It's down some dirt road along the trail. Yeah.
I used to have maps in my car. But this chestnut thing, I picked a gallon the other day on the ground. I didn't get dirty. Didn't get tired. This is a year for apples, so we're going to get all these different... I wish we could document all the cider going on, because most guys who make wine this time of year using Concord grapes that grow out in the backyard or in the woods. The cider guys, I think they're growing some... They're using apples that could have been cider apples years ago. Some of you unusual trees. There's wildness. There's some trees out there that have been reclaimed, or whatever you do when you bring it back to life.
Right, yeah.
And some of these apples, they're only... little 2-inch diameter apples.
Mm-hmm. Very tight tannins.
Yep, they're tannic and they're sharp and whatever. Yeah. I don't think they know what they are. The guy up there at Cider Days in Coleraine.
John Bunker.
I met this guy.
Yeah. He's based in Maine. Yes. He's based in Maine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he had a table.
Yeah,
he had a dozen tables set up in Coleraine.
Yeah.
And he had to have 100 apples on paper plates with the names.
Yes.
I was amazed.
He's great.
I never saw anything like that before.
Yeah.
And he makes cider blends. We'll do this, we'll do this. And the seasons change, and the apples change, and the yeast may be a little different yeast. Mm-hmm. They do different things.
So I want to get back to that thought of the wild yeast, and they were using the barrels. But you could do that spontaneous fermentation. You don't need to put it in a barrel.
You don't need
it in a
barrel.
I just want to be clear about that.
Well, barrel is the easiest way to store a large amount of liquid. That's why they use barrels.
Right.
They never thought the barrels would put flavor into it. maybe they thought it, but the absorbency of the oak keeps the bacteria alive.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow it goes dormant, and when you put liquid in, it starts up again.
Yeah,
so, but the thing about natural and spontaneous and wild, it's kind of the romantic thing about it, about having something like that, a wild
sake. It's sexy. It's sexy being
wild.
It is.
It sounds good, and some guys like that. I don't know how some of these guys have consistency in their ciders. If it's a wild, like the Fermentory guys, where's it, Mass or Vermont? You know the one I'm talking about,
yeah,
Urban.
Yeah, I do, yeah. It's not in Mass.
It's one of those states. And he does strictly, and somebody else does it too, I think, in, after you have any Yankee Brew News, I have it described in there. But when I did the story about, the cover story I just did for Yankee Brew News, the paper that Bree and I write for, I talked to one cider maker. I tried to get a small one in each state. The guys that you want to hang out with, the big guys, well, they already got their thing done. I want to talk to these little guys. And this fellow said he did everything spontaneous. I didn't ask him how his consistency was. He makes the same every year, but I think it's probably vintage dated, sort of, where 2015 may be different than 2016.
Mm-hmm.
But still, that's awesome brewery. That's good. I like
that's
that.
That's just like grapes. I mean, that's where I think
it's like
a lot
wine.
Of,
sure.
Yeah.
Every year is a little different.
Every year, and it's all terroir.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the wine community really embraced terroir, but, you know, that's so true for the apple community, too. Cider.
Well, wine, cider is wine. Think about it, really. I mean, if you add sugar, defining a cider as an apple wine is just getting very loosely defined, and getting cider and adding sugar, bringing it up to maybe 12% apple wine. But I make New England cider, which is brown sugar and raisins, which I'm sure the Pilgrims did.
Oh, absolutely.
And my alcohol is probably 8%. It's not really wine, but it's the same thing. I can put more sugar.
High alcohol.
Yeah.
And I get concerned about that kind of being unclear for folks who, and the cider community, if we don't really kind of standardize a little bit or have clarity in a way. I mean, I don't want to, not that things have to be totally standardized, but for the education time right now, it's when it's really growing. I think cider is cider, and wine is wine. You know,
right.
It's just really different. A grape is not an apple. It's a totally different beast.
Well, we can define it. You can define it like you define wine. So if you're defining Pinot Noir, Burgundy, the grape is Pinot Noir.
Mm-hmm.
Right next to it's Merlot.
Right.
Different flavor, same red grape. So you could do that with apples, it'd be a little complex.
Yeah.
You could say blends. I don't know how you'd do it. It'd be tough. But if you had individual apples, specific apples that went into that blend, and there was a cidery that does that, and I've forgotten which one it was. It's in New England. And he uses particular English-style varieties, cultivars of apples that he brought back to life. His name is Steve.
Are you talking about Farnham Hill?
Farnham Hill.
Yeah, Farnham
yeah,
Hill.
He brought some back.
Yeah.
And I've had a cider. Cider's great. But I like most ciders I have.
Yeah.
If they're dry, very, very bone dry, I probably would drink that after one with a little bit of residual sweetness in it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they're all different. And as far as the wild ones, it's unpredictable. So the big companies, I'm not sure how you can market a wild farm cider every year and have it consistent. It's like Cantillon in Belgium making a lambic. They make lambics every year. It's wild from the yeast that's in the air. They open the windows.
That's 2015 or 2014's variety.
That's right. But still, the barrel back in the brewery has the impregnated bacteria and yeast.
Yeah.
So that helps it along.
Right.
But
it's a different scale to evaporation, and I think that's happening with the larger producers. They have to meet that demand, or they're doing contract brewing or contract cider making. They have a plant here or there, like some of these large operations do. And it's for the betterment of everyone.
Let's take a quick pause here, and I'd like to ask you to please subscribe to Cider Chat via iTunes or Stitcher. And while you're there, please leave a review and rating. There's an option to leave from 1 to 5 stars, and it would be great to get some 5-star ratings right now. We've been trending very high in iTunes in News and Noteworthy section for food, and by giving a review and rating, that will continue to help this podcast. If you like what you're hearing, and I hope that you do, and I'd like to continue to doing more shows of this, I have so many amazing cider makers and cider enthusiasts to talk about. Some of the upcoming shows, we'll be talking next week to David Cords of Sonoma Cider, that's out in California, and his cider making techniques. I've talked to some other cider makers, such as Ryan Burke from Angry Orchard. He'll be coming on in a coming episode. And also some orchard care and things that I feel are quite topical as we move along in the year. And right now, this is a good time, if you've been making cider, to make sure that you're getting it out of your carboy and racking it over. So much stuff ahead. So please, a small way to do this is to support Cider Chat by just merely subscribing to this podcast via iTunes and leaving a review and rating. Now we're going to get back to Paul as he discusses his cider making recipes and some key ingredients that he puts in. This is Rhea Windcaller, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Let's first talk about Cider Maker of the Year.
Maker of the Year, it's no longer happening now, but there was a system called New England Home Brewer of the Year, Cider Maker, Mead Maker. Mm-hmm. There's cider styles, I think there's 4 or 5 cider styles with the BJCP, the certified program. Mm-hmm. And you had to get points in each one. There was about 5 or 6 competitions. And you had to get points, and if you won one, you got 3 points, second was 2, and third was 1, and you couldn't get another win. If you won twice, you only get 3 points for the year. And whoever had the most points at the end of the year was the cider maker. Mm-hmm. I got lucky. I got it, beat a guy from Maine, Dr. Tom O'Connor III.
Yes.
He had it, and I beat him. It took me a couple of years, but I beat him, and then I got the cider maker, and I continued with high points for about 12 years I was cider maker, and I stopped keeping track of the
12
points.
12 years?
I think 12 years. I was mead maker also for that. But I made home brewer, mead maker, and cider maker the same year. I was just full-time. I had the shop. I was full-time brewing all the time. Every week I brewed something. Mm. I tried to make points. It was just a goal, and I made it. But I learned a lot about mistakes. There weren't a lot of cider judges, nor are there now, in New England. There's some, there's not a lot, like beer judges, but I learned a lot on what not to do and what to do. To make a cider is simple. It's simply getting the cider, pasteurized or not, and adding yeast, and letting it ferment. Most times you do 5 gallons, letting it ferment at room temperature, and after a transfer of the cider off the dead yeast, off the drop yeast, you let it complete its fermentation till it stops fermenting, and then you bottle it. If you want to clear it, use clarifiers you could add to it. If not...
And a clarifier would be...
Well, Sparkaloid is a clarifier I like the best. Sparkaloid looks like pencil sharpener shavings that you boil in water and you toss in. And what it does, I guess scientifically, they call it a tannic acid adherer. The tannins cause a haze in some cider. And you add this Sparkaloid, and it drops it out of solution, the clarifier. Mm-hmm. You do take out a little bit of proteins, I think, and maybe a little bit of body, like you kind of demasculate it, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, or feminize it, or whatever. But
demasculate, okay.
Yeah, but you're going to edit all this, aren't you?
No way.
Oh, no? Okay.
No way. It's all going in there. Yeah. But adding that versus just continuing to what we would call racking off, or what Paul referred to as pouring it off. But typically...
Well, that's not really pouring. It's really transferring. Well, as far as the process, it's basic. Sanitized vessel. Put your cider into a sanitized vessel. Add the yeast, the cultured yeast.
And what is a good beginner's yeast for someone who is...
I'm strict on this. I only use cultured yeast from Y Yeast. I've used the White Labs, but now I just buy the Y Yeast. I just use that.
And which
It's called cider yeast, simply cider yeast, 4766, I think is the number. And I use just that. I make a starter. You don't have to make a starter. The starter is like a little yeast beginning.
You double it as if you're making sourdough bread.
Yeah, it's the same thing as making sourdough. You actually, it's not really getting more yeast cells, what you do, but the problem with fermentation, with cider also, is when you pitch the yeast, you drop the yeast into it, it takes a little time for the yeast to absorb oxygen. Mm-hmm. You have to shake it. Mm-hmm. And after that it absorbs oxygen, it develops cell walls. Then when it has cell walls, it divides, and that's fermentation.
Right.
That may take a day or
mm-hmm.
two.
Mm-hmm.
That's the lag time. When you make a starter, meaning you get to maybe a little bit of cider, add some yeast the day before, maybe a quart or two, it starts fermenting. We've gotten through the lag phase. You're going to fermentation stage, mm-hmm. so you're into a logarithmic growth. So your two cells turn into four into eight. You have exponential growth.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just getting more numbers, you're getting a yeast on the run. It's already started to run. So when I pitch my yeast, typically I pitch my yeast and my beers, cider is the same way, about 5 o'clock, the way my day goes. I brew the same way every time. And I start brewing about 11. I pitch my yeast about 5 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
I leave my business. I brew up my business. At 8, by 8 o'clock, I have positive growth. I have mm-hmm. positive fermentation, CO2 coming off the top.
Mm-hmm.
That's only 4 or 5 hours,
yeah.
or 3 or 4 hours.
Nice.
So most times, and the good thing about that is the bacteria that's always around, because we are home brewers and we have bacteria in the air. We can't sanitize as well as professional people do.
Mm-hmm.
We could, but it's tough. So the fermentation happens quickly, and it kind of beats the yeast, the bacteria out.
Mm-hmm.
There's bacteria there too, probably, but it's maybe one to 10 billion yeast cells. So bacteria, you have to watch it. But so basically, just putting the yeast in, letting it ferment for 2 weeks, week or two, rack it or transfer it, not pouring it, not splashing it, with a tube, with a siphon, to the second vessel.
Mm-hmm.
Get it off the yeast. If you leave it on the yeast for too long, the yeast...
2 weeks. That's a short amount of time.
I usually do a week, week and a half.
Really? Wow.
I do
so
my
really
beer, it's only a week.
Wow.
The yeast is still there. Still in solution. So it's still fermenting, even though you don't see the sludge.
That's a good tip.
Yeah. So if the yeast is not taken off... If the liquid is not taken off the yeast may autolyze, meaning break up and put weird flavors in the liquid above it.
Mm.
So you want to rack. Wine guys tend to rack.
Yes.
To get all the sediment out. So when they bottle it, there's not any mother, any sediment in it.
Right.
So I do it one time. I let it sit for a week and a half, we'll say, transfer over without splashing into a receiving sanitized container.
Mm-hmm.
Let it finish. You could do a specific gravity on it. If it doesn't change in a week, that means fermentation is done.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to predict the fermentation. It's very simple. And when you start with cider, you have a sugar solution. And when you're done, there's no sugar left, unless you use a yeast that retains a little bit of it. That's what I do. My yeast retains a little bit of sugar, a little bit of apple flavor, and a little bit of body. So it's hard to describe body, but body is fullness. If you don't have fullness, you have this weak, thin liquid,
mm-hmm.
it's not too palatable. You
mm-hmm.
need some body. So
mm-hmm.
what I do with my ciders is after my cider is finished, I have the recipe I want, I have the tang, the tannics, because I could add tannic acid, I could add different things to bring up the sourness or the sweetness. At the end, I may spike a little bit of sugar syrup in it that has sorbate, the back sweetener, to give a little bit of sweetness, a touch, because an apple without sweetness, fruit without sweetness, is not very good. You have to have a little bit.
Just a little touch. Huh.
But then, the body. If you don't have body, it's lackluster, it's flabby. So
mm-hmm.
that's what wine people call a flabby wine, a wine that's very one-dimensional. And I add a kosher, sanitized glycerin that brings mouthfeel and body up. And I tweak it. Every batch I do, I tweak it by batch. And I just add enough of this to bring the sweetness up. If I want to make a sweet cider,
yeah.
I'll add a little more.
Yeah, sure.
I made a cider last year. I got lucky. It was a New England style with 2 pounds, it was 5 gallons, 2 pounds of brown sugar.
So that was spontaneous?
No, I don't. I don't.
You
do
said
any,
New England. No.
No. This is New England style. The style of New England cider is could have sugars in it, could have raisins in it. It could be fermented spontaneously, but typically homebrew people don't do that. Typically homebrew people who make cider don't do spontaneous fermentations. A few do. Most use a cultured yeast.
Yeah.
Well, I have to.
Right.
This cider I made was 5 gallons of good cider from a local mill.
And what kind of yeast did you use for that?
I use only one yeast. I just use the white yeast.
That's cider yeast. Interesting.
Yep, just use cider yeast.
Huh.
And it had all the tannins and everything I wanted in it. When I was done with it, well, I added sugar. I had a 5 gallon batch. I had 2 pounds of brown sugar and 2 pounds of white raisins. Could be dark raisins. I put all that into a little pot, cooked them. So I sanitized those, put it back into my cider with the yeast, let it ferment, and did the transfer. So 3 or 4 weeks after, I was ready to bottle.
Right.
So what I did also, though, I had these flavors in it. I had a little bit of brown sugar flavor, and the raisin gives it some flavor, but it gives it body, thickness. Think of you're drinking Southern Comfort in your right hand, and you're drinking water in your left hand. The Southern Comfort has that thickness in it. That's what raisins do.
Sure.
So, and I do that with glycerin also. Like I tweak it, but I spike the cider with an extract that I make myself of cinnamon. It's good cinnamon. It's Vietnamese cinnamon I get in New York at the spice markets. And I soak it in a bottle of Bacardi white rum for weeks. And then I spike it. And when I bottle, the day I bottle, I spike the cider with the cinnamon extract. Put a little cinnamon. I could taste it as I poured it. I taste it like you had salt to soup. But what I did, though, was different this time, and I was lucky because it worked. The cider cleared in the carboy in a glass bottle.
Yes.
And you could see through it. So it was done, but it still had fermentation going on. I still had positive pressure.
Yes.
It had a blipping, a little bit of fermentation.
Right, and the airlock on the top of the carboy.
Right, yep. It was active. I bottled it. I bottled cider that wasn't hazy. What it came out was carbonated cider, because the carbonation that was still going on, the fermentation, with in a forced container, in a closed container, it forced carbonated. So I had carbonated cinnamon. So when it popped, the bubbles popped, I smelled the raisins, I smelled the cinnamon.
Beautiful.
And the best, I won Sunday in a big competition. Because when you open the bottle...
Last Sunday.
Yeah, last Sunday. When you open the bottle, you get the fuzz, a little bit of that gas. When you pour it, you get this little bit of a head, and the bubbles pop, cinnamon's in your nose.
Nice.
And the brown sugar. And I got lucky because it was clear.
Yeah. Right.
Most times, it's easy to make it, you know, it's hard. Because if it's clear, it means it's finished, and it won't carbonate. If you add sugar to anything, the residual yeast, which is always there, I know you know this, but...
Yes, of course.
It will cause more sediment, and maybe some haze. But cider is simple. You could do this. The fellow came in yesterday, making 5 ciders, one batch, putting it 5 gallon jugs. This is what you do at home. You want to learn, he's putting the yeast I recommended, the Y yeast, in 2 of them. The other one, he's adding brown sugar. The other one, he's adding raisins. And I gave him a wine yeast, Montrachet, red wine yeast. Write down what it is.
Yeah.
And one was RC212. It's another yeast that guys use for making cider. So he's going to have different flavors. He's going to document it.
Nice.
I hope he documents it. But he'll learn. And I'll say in a year down the road, he's going to document it. And if anybody makes cider, hearing this, write down what you do. Everything.
Keep a notebook.
Because you look and you say, oh, well, I did this and it came out perfect.
Yeah.
You know, repeat it.
Yeah. So. And even the apple blends, too. I mean,
if you ask the farmer what he did, he's going to know.
Absolutely.
And if you wait 2 weeks, he's going to know because he ran out of the McAllens or something. He's going to have different blends. A smart guy keeps making cider right up till the end.
He keeps
the apples and squeezing them at, you know.
And knowing what time of year, because some people are pressing apples before they've actually fully ripened.
That's right, right.
And that really leaves a very high acid in the apples.
And some people like that sort of thing.
And we see a lot of those on the market. So.
And you get money out there right away. You make your cider and sell on. I saw cider at the Hebron Fair. That was 4 weeks ago. It wasn't good yet. It was okay. Didn't have the tang. It didn't have the push and the flavor complexity. And I think there's only a couple apples in it. It was refreshing. It was okay. Sure, but sure. It wasn't like the late apple.
And it's part of the education. And also, cider will condition in the bottle. I have different ciders, from 09. It's just like a fruit. You have to watch out. You can't leave it there forever. But it will condition. A good cider will get better, but a mediocre cider, I never found, got better.
Well, this podcast is national, isn't it?
International.
Okay. Okay, one thing about that, I'll say it clearly, and not that I'm prejudiced of being in New England, but I've traveled. I've had cider in
some
places.
Sure, you do. You travel extensively. Yes.
But the cider in New England, I rarely get a bad cider. I don't even get a medium cider. Most ciders are above average, every one I have. Of course, it's on a nice fall day. I'm in the parking lot having my first drink.
It's terroir.
It's absolutely, it's terroir, right? It's terroir for sure.
Yeah.
But it's just apple cider is good.
Yeah.
I mean, I never had a bad cheesecake. Well, I had a bad cheesecake, but not a bad cheesecake,
Sure,
but,
sure. Well, so what I'd like to let the listeners know is where they could find you online. You have a website?
Oh, yeah, I have a website. It's homemadebrew.net. I've had the site for 16 years. It's catalogs. There's a few things on there.
So people could buy stuff online?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have an online business. Right. Yeah. If I have events, I'm doing a beer bus tour, and I'll advertise things on the site. Mm-hmm. But I don't do too much selling. I'll sell.
On
I have an online business,
right,
but I don't push the sales. Mm-hmm. I don't
but
like
you
people.
You do tours. You
I do tours
overseas.
I do tours overseas.
Belgium.
I do tours here.
Yep. Doing any cider tours?
No, I haven't thought of it. I've done beer tours, I did wine tours, I'm working on a sake tour, but that's expensive because it's going to be in New York.
And can we just mention that sake bar that you went to in New York?
Oh, I went to the sake bar. There's a lot of sake bars in New York City, but the sake bar I went to last week is in East Village. It's my favorite neighborhood. I was there at a wine event with my lady friend. It's called Sake Bar Decibel. It's on East 6th Avenue. It's a little hole-in-the-wall basement. And they had probably 100 sakis hung up at the bar. But they had two sakis right off I had. They had a cedar-aged sake, which you don't see. You see oak and that type of stuff. And they had also a namasake, which was the fresh, the wild sake. It's not really wild. They don't pasteurize it a second time, so it goes a little spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
But unusual. And
nice.
Syrup cold. Yep.
Cider makers take note. Sake's will be coming up too. Well, look, I really appreciate you chatting with us.
Oh, I like doing it. This is a time for cider right now. The growth is great, and it's everybody can make it.
Yeah.
It's simple to make.
And delicious too.
Yep.
All right. Well, we'll see you in Ciderville next time, and thank you very much.
Good.
I really would like to thank Paul Zacco one more time for spending his time with me. He's really like an encyclopedia of cider making, and the guy is highly skilled. I mean, you wouldn't become a cider maker of the year if you didn't have that skill. And for those cider makers who are listening out there who have only been commercial for a couple of years, I mean, this is kind of important thing. I mean, he's been making cider way before it became a really viable commercial operation for many. And in that way, he's a gift in so many ways, at least in the U.S. Alrighty. So next week, do tune in. We got a great episode with David Cords from Sonoma Cider. And I'm always looking for great stories too. So if you have something that you would like to chat with me about and share with the Cider Chat community in Ciderville, just send an email to Ria, that is R-I-A, at ciderchat.com. And if I'm catching you out and about to or fro for your Thanksgiving holiday season, I'm wishing you safe travels. Kick back, grab a glass, and enjoy a good chat. This is Ria Wincoller signing off for now, and I look forward to seeing you next time in Ciderville.